You're listening to Oklahoma Voices on KGOU. I'm Kurt Gwartney. With me in the KGOU studios, and not for the first time, is our friend Kyle Dillingham. And Kyle has just returned from a not quite around the world trip, but pretty close. Tell me, first of all, where you went and why.
Thank you, Curtis, for having me in the studio today. I was traveling with my band Horseshoe Road. We were selected by the U.S. State Department of Cultural and Educational Affairs to do an American Music Abroad program. We toured to the Far East. We started in South Korea, went on to Taiwan, and then Burma, which the rest of the world knows as Myanmar, and then Far East Russia. We were in Vladivostok, Kamchatka, Nakhotka. This is Pacific Rim Russia. So think about a nine-hour flight due east from Moscow, and then you'll arrive where we were. Basically, the idea, the purpose of the trip was it's musical diplomacy. It's people-to-people diplomacy versus government-to-government, and it's a way that to send musicians in to hopefully bring a positive image and positive experience encounter for the citizens of these countries to say, okay, this is another picture of America instead of what we just see on the news.
So it wasn't just that you and Horseshoe Road performed. You actually worked with the local musicians and groups. How was that in terms of like working out the language, and or did music kind of make that easier?
Music always makes that easier. There were, you know, obviously some linguistic barriers at times. In other cases, the English language level was very strong. I even found myself in one circumstance where in the south of Taiwan, where one of the musicians actually had done all of her studies in Paris at the conservatory. And so we used French to communicate, oddly enough. But music really does, it really is the international language. We say that a lot, and it kind of seems a little cliche. But when you get into a circumstance where you're on stage in Myanmar and you've got 10 Burmese harp players, a variety, an assortment of mallet instruments and little flutes that they're referring to as oboes, and you're trying to work up a program in about an hour's time, doing local music, traditional Myanmar music, as well as some traditional American music. Really, you are depending on your knowledge of the music and your ears. And can you follow along? Can you put this together and into something that will communicate to the audience and have an impact? And it certainly did in all cases.
So how much study did you do ahead of time to get a handle on the diverse range of music? Because you really are covering, I mean, a very large portion of the planet there.
Right. For Taiwan, it was about 9 months out that began working on this program, because it was a huge collaboration. You're talking about Taipei Symphony Orchestra becoming a part of their season, coordinating with the Taipei city government. What is the programming going to be? It's a little different when you're trying to coordinate music on stands for about 70 musicians as opposed to, you know, an acoustic trio and maybe a singer or something. So that was a ways out, although it was not entirely defined exactly what was going to happen, and there were still questions being answered in the first rehearsal. But we started and had a briefing in D.C., and just before flying to Korea to do our performances there, the very first thing we had was a radio interview the day we arrived. And I got an email on my phone just before leaving the country with a PDF of a tune, and they said they would like us to please have a bluegrass version of this ready for our radio interview the next morning. And so we literally, as we were unpacking our instruments, began learning the song and then simultaneously creating a bluegrass, so to speak, arrangement of this, and then performing it for the very first time live on national radio in Seoul. So there, you know, there was a variety of things thrown our way, but hey, it's all part of the game.
You've mentioned one country in particular a couple of times already in the interview, and I want to ask more about it because in Myanmar, Burma, only recently have relations with the United States been at any level of direct communication. How did you find yourself there, and what was that like?
Well, it really was – what happens with the American Music Abroad program, Kurt, is that the U.S. State Department gets – certain artists that have been selected, then they sort of put them out there to the different posts internationally and say, whose schedule can accommodate these musicians at this particular time? And the U.S. Embassy in Myanmar sort of jumped for us. And fortunately, because we discovered even in D.C. when we were having our briefing, everybody was jealous that we were getting to go to Myanmar. Everybody's like, wow. We can't wait for you to get back and tell us how that goes. Because it is fresh. It's just opened up. Only recently was Hillary Clinton there as well as Obama. And at that particular point, it really did set forth an energy in that country that's saying, you know, wow, the U.S. president came to visit us. Secretary of State Clinton came to visit us. They really are getting their feet under them. I have to tell you, we were surprised at how far along they are in terms of their development. It's certainly not first world, but there was a lot of the things that you'd expect to find in a major city in Yangon. And being there gave us an incredible opportunity, historically speaking, because in over 30 years, like you said, it's been basically closed off. And we were the very first American band that the Myanmar government allowed the U.S. Embassy to program publicly. In the past, they've actually had some different musicians and performers and speakers in Myanmar, but they all had to be private events that were invitation only at the American Center or at the embassy compound itself, and could not do any programming out in the public or let the people know. Mm-hmm. To give you an idea, while we were there, the very first newspaper, Free Press newspaper, was published, where it wasn't basically run through the government machine and scraped to make sure it's exactly how it should read. And we also did an interview on their national television station. It's sort of what they call their first private TV station. It's as private as it can be. There's still some issues there. But they're just learning. They even the owner of the station was so anxious to meet us. He said, "You know, this is the very first time we'll have interviewed an American group on our show. We are still learning. Please excuse us. We still don't even quite understand." They were asking us, how should this interview go? Because they really didn't have any idea about real journalism and what kind of questions they should be asking us, because it was such a foreign concept. And so that was a really nice experience for us too. And then a historical performance in their national theater. It was the very first time that the Myanmar government allowed the U.S. Embassy to use their national theater for an event. U.S. Ambassador got up to speak at the beginning and marked it as a historical moment in that country and in our relationship with one another. And so from that standpoint, from the goals of the program in terms of seeing the relationships between America and Myanmar and the other countries we were in, every post just said, this was the most good we have ever accomplished with one single performance or a single group. There had not ever been a stronger impact, even going back to the original program, which was the Jazz Ambassadors, when the whole concept was began with like Louis Armstrong and Benny Goodman, and seeing these major artists go. They said, in anybody's recollection, there has never been a program that did so much good for our goals and our purposes within these countries.
Why do you think that was? Why do you think that this was different?
I'll tell you, Curtis, I had a chance to speak with the cultural affairs assistant, which is the local staff in Taiwan, who just gave me that direct question. She just sort of pinned me down. She said, Kyle, why do you even know that your group has had such a strong impact here? And I shared this at the at our debriefing in D.C. as well with the State Department. I said, you know, this is a program which looks for bands across the United States, will receive, you know, 300 or 400 applications nationwide. They'll go through a process of choosing bands. You know, there's a lot of things that go into that. You have, of course, the quality of the music, the different types of a variety of programming. And then they also want to know what kind of ambassadors you will be. And I told them, I said, we're not a band really that you've selected to plug into this program. I said, my whole goal and mission as a musician is that of a musical diplomat. And I think that's probably why. That is our focus, not our focus isn't being the best band we can be. Our focus is to do the most good we can in terms of creating connections and developing relationships. Ever since I started Horseshoe Road in 2005, the very first thing we did as a band was come up with a mission statement. And that mission was entertaining by showing God's love through our experience with the emotional and dynamic gift of music. And I think that that's the reason. I think it has to do with the mission. When you're on a mission, it needs to be defined, and I think that's where the success lies therein.
You're listening to Oklahoma Voices on KGOU. We're speaking with Kyle Dillingham of Horseshoe Road and about his recent trip pretty much around the Pacific Rim from Korea to Taiwan to Myanmar, Burma, and then to parts of eastern Russia. I have this image in my mind that I'm going to go in Myanmar maybe in 5-10 years or so, and I'm going to see all these Heartland Acoustic bands running around. Do you think that's a possibility?
I think it is a distinct possibility, and I'll tell you why. Already, it's not even been 1 month since we were in the country. The very first performance we did was on a rooftop downtown Yangon, 5-story building, and what the embassy did is they made it an open jam. And they basically gave local musicians a chance to meet us earlier in the afternoon. We got to know each other musically. And then for our concert that night, it was an open jam forum in that we played a couple tunes and we'd get one group up and we would jam tunes with these local musicians. And it went on that way through the course of the whole night until we were all playing together. A fantastic evening. Well, there was a violinist that came to the jam. And internet is real shaky in Myanmar. Download speeds aren't even adequate to download an MP3 on iTunes. So there was this violinist, and he had come across bluegrass fiddling somewhere on the internet and fell madly in love with it. He wanted more than anything to fiddle. And he told me after, he learned 3 fiddle tunes, we played them together that night, and he told me afterwards, and he said, you are my master. You are the very first one, the very, very first ever real bluegrass country fiddle player to come to my country. And he said, you'll be my master. I'm going to learn from you. I mean, how can you, what can you say to this? And he said, please, 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 is there a chance where we can work together? And we had a free day. We had a day of rest. We had 3 rest days in our entire 32-day tour. I gave that one up, and I spent about 5 hours with this musician and some of his friends at back at the hotel working on bluegrass music and bluegrass fiddling. And then I got a flash drive and loaded it down with all of the music mm-hmm. I had on my mm-hmm. computer, a lot of my own music, because he was really interested in emulating my style and my tunes. And I gave him some of my recordings. And there's a video on Facebook just about 2 weeks ago that he posted with his friends. And they're sitting around, and they've been learning my music. And when he took off playing this fiddle tune, Liberty, that I do a lot, he had learned it from a live recording that I had given him, and it just sounded my wife said, "Oh my gosh, who is that? Is that you?" And the guitarist in the background sounded just like my friend Terry Scarberry here in Norman. And they were really listening and learning. And I gave him a bow before I left. He had really, really bad equipment. I gave him a bow. I gave him some strings. There's such a need for instruments. A lot of the people that came to the jam, they were playing on what would be like a $25 pawn shop instrument, you know.
Yeah.
But they, with all their heart and getting everything they can out of these instruments, and I would not be surprised if in 5-10 years when you go back, you would see some musicians that are reflecting that Oklahoma spirit in their music.
In terms of the way the program works, and even though you'd said, you know, Horseshoe Road has this mission statement, it still takes time away from, for lack of a better term, maybe day job. I mean, how do you and the band, how do you balance this outreach effort with performing and working and developing as a group?
Well, there is a balance to be made. I am performing full time, so for me, it is. I mean, that's about as important of a gig as I can have. With all the work that went in the months leading up, it was certainly less than minimum wage. So when you start looking at an opportunity like that, it's not about the money. It's about the overall value. You say, we'll make this much money. Will this cover our expenses? Yes. Will it make us rich? No. Will it open doors for our country? Will it help benefit our overall mission for the state? Yes. And I'm now sitting on a lot of personal and professional contacts and relationships that I developed and will be following up over the next few months, maybe back in Russia as early as September. The Taipei city government has proposed a recording for me to come back and do a recording with the Taipei Symphony Orchestra. Along with that, there was talk of Oklahoma City and Taipei are sister cities. And the cultural commissioner said, you know, I could make this happen. We could bring the Taipei Symphony Orchestra to Oklahoma and do some concerts together. But we should do a recording first. So there's a lot of interesting opportunities that come about that are not necessarily money in the bag, but it's more about, I mean, I always say this, you know, the relationship is the most important thing. In my career as a musician, what I love and always have loved is that music is something you can share with other people. You hope that it will make you money, but there's nothing like that experience of sharing your music and watching it touch other people's lives and lives, having an opportunity to change people's lives. And I think it has to be counted as real value.
In terms of the type of music that you and Horseshoe Road performed while on this tour, what were the crowd favorites? What were the things that the people seemed to really enjoy? And then how does that compare to the reactions you get here in Oklahoma when you play? I'm curious if there were any connections there.
Right. Yeah, there are. It's odd. I do a little Russian gypsy music, and usually in all my performances here in Oklahoma and anywhere else in the world, I'll throw that into my performances. And I always kind of joke that I have a little bit of a gypsy spirit in me. And I'd more recently found out that my mom's maiden name is Kokajan. It's my grandparents. And they were actually settled in the Cherokee Strip land run in 1893 from Czechoslovakia. But I then discovered that they had actually immigrated from Armenia. So the lineage actually does go back, and it makes sense that, you know, a little bit of a, my family were basically, you know, perhaps a little bit gypsy, you know,
sure,
in their lifestyle, to say the least. And that music really resonates with me, and I think it has a connection everywhere in the world, stronger than anything. It's stronger than the Orange Blossom Special, even right here in the heart of Oklahoma. It's just so full of passion and energy and life, and it just reaches people everywhere we went. And example, obviously in Russia, it had a compounded effect because that's also a thread of who they are.
Yeah, it was familiar.
It's familiar, extremely familiar. Although I had several Russians tell me that this was the best Ochichonia they have ever heard, which made me feel very good. In Taipei, in Taiwan in general, a standing ovation is not a part of the culture. You know, you don't just automatically stand up at the end of a concert because they did well. We finished. We had been brought back on stage for an encore. We played an encore. They had us do another encore. We threw in the gypsy music. And we do it kind of like a fantasy, and it's long, and it builds, and the energy and intensity builds, 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 and it's like this flurry at the end. And at the end, about a 10-minute deal, the audience just jumped to their feet, you know, I don't know, 4,000 people. And they just, later, the local staff that worked for the American government there said, "Oh my gosh, it was just like they couldn't take it any longer." And they just had to just jump to their feet, including the deputy mayor of Taipei, the cultural commissioner. She said, these people are usually, they usually make their opening remarks and then they leave about 15 minutes into the concert. They were there through the final encore, and they were standing, they were clapping, they were singing. And she said, "I've never seen this happen before. This was really, really fantastic."
I know that there are different people who might be, you know, sometimes have suspicions about the federal government and what the U.S. government does, and how we relate, you know, to other countries and things. What's your experience been, you know, really being on the front lines of that process? How would you respond to people who might say, "Oh, well, you went on the behest of the federal government"? How do you respond to people who might say that?
I respond by saying proudly we did so. And I did learn something. I've had my own questions about this as well. And then we were in D.C. at our briefing. It came as quite a surprise to me that we had all these people in suits briefing us and urging us to go be who we are. And they, you know, the people in position in government are sort of trapped, and they know it. They know that they are a part of this game, and there's no way out. Governments have certain relationships with other governments, and it's very formal, and they can't just be who they are. And I left our briefing saying, you know, these people really believe in what we can do, going in just who we are, wearing our normal clothes and meeting people and talking about who we are and talking about where we're from, playing our music, sharing, and being involved with locals. I said, "Why don't they do this?" And the answer is, they just can't. They just can't.
It's too official.
It's too official. It's too official to be informal like that. So it was really special to see. Even the Assistant Secretary of State requested to be a part of our briefing and debriefing. The program director said we were the only band out of all the bands selected that she actually requested specifically to be a part of our briefing. And it was just one of these things where you realize these people, they almost feel like this is like our big hope. This is our only hope. You know, what they're doing is, it's official. It's just official business. But they all believe that this is the way we can really gain ground. We can really move forward in our relationship with these countries. And the Assistant Secretary of State had us, while we were there in D.C., had us go play. She was about to have her entire staff together for the budget meeting, and she invited us to go perform for her staff. And when we came back a month later in debriefing, she said, "I tell you what, ever since you guys played, that's all that people have been talking about." She asked us to play for them again. She said, "You, as a band, you may have single-handedly saved this program in the budget."
Wow.
With your performance.
The budget. Yeah. Wow.
And they experienced what we're trying to do. They had their own personal experience. They were moved. They felt the power in this kind of program and this kind of interaction. And it is as long as it's taken seriously. And we tried to express as deeply as we could the seriousness in which we take this responsibility. Because I mentioned before, it's not about the money. It's not a vacation. We worked harder than, you know, we've ever worked in our lives. We had busy, treacherous schedules. But it was something that we feel like, you know, I'm so thankful to all the men and women that serve our country, that are on the front lines. And for me, you know, I'm not in military, but this was I felt as close as I could come doing what I do, to try to do something on behalf of my country. I have a deep sense of patriotism. I love America. I love where we live. I love the opportunities we have. And to be able to serve our country in that way with our music was very, very, very special.
You talked about the country, and before I have you play, I do want to ask you, what do people think of Oklahoma? What did you find? Did you find that, first of all, anybody knew really anything about Oklahoma?
Well, I had gone thinking that everybody would at least know of the Thunder by now, but a lot of people in the Far East are not really that into NBA, so that wasn't really the connecting point. But we did find that as we wrapped up our performances, people actually telling us afterwards that, "Thank you. We feel now that we know something about Oklahoma, and we have the feeling of Oklahoma through your music." And that was a good thing for me to hear, because Oklahoma for me is about a feeling. Even when I come back from a trip and I step off the plane, it feels different. And hopefully we were able to take that feeling of home for us and sharing that with people around the world.
Kyle Dillingham, thank you so much for sharing your stories on this road.
Thank you very much, Kurt.